Blog Talk Radio.
For some folks to hear my voice lead us off tonight, seeing as how I was absent last week. But nonetheless, this is Isles Beat. I am John Jordan, back once again after a week away, joined as usual by my partner in crime, Mr. BD.
Sir. Howdy, sir.
We let off with our movie trailer introduction, and seeing as how this is Star Wars week, I thought we might go back and forth a little bit about the long-awaited. The follow-up to the original trilogy that's got everybody in a tizzy and people shutting off their phones and turning off their computers, and hell, if this is what it took for us to get to break away from our electronic dependence, maybe this should have been out several years ago. I don't know. What say you?
Well, yeah. I even put together, I was able to go to a couple of things and see a couple of reviews that I trusted that didn't go into any of the plot or the spoilers, and I was able to put on Facebook like a little description to most people who are really being very careful. But the reviews have been pretty good so far, without knowing anything about the plot or anything else, and that's all you really want to hear after, I was actually one of the people that was at the opening of the original prequels back in, 1999?
Yeah, sounds about right.
In the city, I went to the opening was over at the... it wasn't the Hollywood opening, it was the New York City opening, and it was like the night before, and we're at the Ziegfeld, which is in the city, which is a great place because you could get assigned seats, which was tremendous at the time because not many places did it, and I was able to score a bunch of tickets. So my middle brother Scott, sadly a Ranger fan, and a couple friends and a cousin, and we all went and saw The Phantom Menace, and they I remember a friend and my brother were being interviewed by like Japanese TV and all this other crap, and then we watched the movie, and I'm realizing very quickly with the horrendous dialogue right off the bat that this is not very good. And then when you come out, it's like 2 o'clock in the morning, and we're trying to rationalize what we just saw, which was a great experience, but the prequels, or at least especially The Phantom Menace, was a terrible, terrible, terrible movie. And as I show my kids the Star Wars movies, we're just doing 4, 5, and 6. The prequels do not exist. To give you any idea.
You are a far more disciplined man than I. My oldest boy especially got into it pretty quickly, and I did the chronological thing with him. I spoke to a guy at work today actually about the same thing, and I said, it's to me, I get as a film fan and a guy that studied film in college a bit, I look at the prequel trilogy and I cringe at many things, plot holes, the dialogue you referenced, the characters that weren't necessary, things of that nature. But overall, as far as the full story, I can handle the narrative. I'm okay with it. And I let the boys watch it. I didn't throw it into the ether, but I certainly prefer the original. And I said to my friend today, and I thought you might get a kick out of this. Actually, I thought of you when I said this. You might understand this type of analysis or an attempt at analysis. But you know that trilogy, the original trilogy, is such an iconic piece of art, and all three such iconic individual pieces of art. That there isn't much to compare it to in terms of films or trilogies or what have you, that's going to be picked apart. Anything that's going to be compared to it, anything that's going to be related to it, is going to be nitpicked to death. And so the prequels never had a chance, in my opinion, and nor should they have, because they're the opening act, right? If you think about it chronologically, they're not the main event. The main event already happened. And what you have now.
That.
I think what you have now coming up, these guys right here, I don't know if that's why I was so nervous about this sequel trilogy that's just starting now. There hasn't been pressure like this on films in a long time to deliver, because you're coming after the main event. And I'm trying to look at it like that anyway. I'm excited. We're going Saturday, and if I ruin it for myself before then that'll be a shame on me.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to see it like first thing Sunday morning, just because when you have a 6-year-old and a 4-year-old, it's a little tricky to do it in the evening. So we changed gears and we decided to do it like Sunday morning. The thing is with the prequels is, you know what's going to happen. You know the writing of it. One is, we knew that Lucas lost touch with a lot of the attributes, or really kind of lost his grip of what he was trying to do. But you're also, when you're doing a prequel, you know exactly what's going to happen and where it ends up, and that really limits of where you can go and what you can do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So between that and being kind of out of touch with whatever, you know, creativity that he did have, it became a giant mess. But, you know, it's neither here nor there. Now, the reviews have been very good. They've compared it. They said that, it's a movie that's comparable to the original trilogy. I think the most felt that it wasn't as good as Empire Strikes Back, but it was certainly, what I'm seeing, is superior to Return of the Jedi, and maybe something in the, you know, that was very equal to the Star Wars, the original. And that's really what you want to see, because, you know, you want it to take the next step, but it also needs to fall in line with what we remember it being. And that seems to be J.J. Abrams' skill set, that he's able to kind of honor the masters of, you know, like he did with Star Trek. He honored what they were doing with the original Star Trek movie, and was able to kind of give it a reboot. And I think that, they said that at least where I was understanding, that he does a lot of, you know, very careful work here to keep it within the Star Wars canon, but also, you know, his own, you know, moving it to very Spielberg territory, which I think is probably good in retrospect. So we'll see what we feel about it next week.
So we are, maybe we'll touch on this once more, because the little ones here are 7 and 5, so we're in the same ballpark as you, but we're going to try and brave the 2 p.m.er on Saturday. And that means that, you know, I'm just going to, you know, I'll save you some time. I'm going to go ahead and give you a call as soon as we're done, and I'll tell you, everything that I find out. And I'll start with something I've already found out, which is that you're never going to believe this, but Darth Vader is Luke Skywalker's father. You believe that? It's some crazy
shit. I can't believe it, man.
Yeah.
So
we actually had a joke in college, and we never pulled it off. We were gonna, you know, get a little inebriated and go to the re-release, and when it's revealed that Darth Vader is in fact Anakin and is Luke's father, we were gonna stand up and throw things in the theater and go, "You gotta be kidding me! This is bullshit!" And we never followed through on that one. So. In any event, we're off track, and while we're off track, while I was away last week, I listened to your solo execution, and I've already praised you privately. I'll do so publicly. That isn't easy to do, and you've done it twice now and done so successfully. I as everybody knows, in the early stages of the show, I tried to do that once when you had a conflict, and I couldn't even get the fucking thing to record. So as long as you get it going, you're a step ahead of me. But when I was listening to the show, folks out there are taking a listen tonight, you should do yourself a favor. And especially if you're listening through iTunes or through podcasts on your iPhone, slow it down to half speed. It is a trip. We're speaking perfectly normally right now, and we're both 100% sober, I'm sure, but we both sound 1,000% wasted, and it is hilarious. it's something to behold, and I invite everyone to take a listen to BD in particular at half speed.
Which is already a lazy drawl as it is, very non-radio drawl, but... But yeah, thanks. You know, I felt like we needed to check in and do a little update. I was able to kind of get something out there. We're almost in the same place as we were last week anyway, except for the, you know, pretty crappy loss with a very bad performance by Halak. I felt that we can go into it real quick, but, the Islanders have a wonderful run. We were wondering in the last 10-game increment if they would take that West Coast trip and move it forward, and they did. And then eventually they hit a little bit of a wall where, you know, the goaltender didn't – it was very not even mediocre, substandard goaltending. The Islanders came out good in the first – and okay in the second and the third. I didn't think overall they played a very bad game, but unfortunately, if the goalie's not quite right, and that was probably Halak's worst showing this year, that's the way it's going to go. I felt that a lot of people were kind of looking for their, you know, when they're disappointed, they're trying to grab whatever narrative. Oh, Cappy didn't have them ready. They looked fine.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite one right there.
Cabby didn't have them ready because they're going to be, you know, connected to some sort of battery. Everybody falls to these narratives because I think that some people that have this negative take have really become at stake to it. And they find this need every time they're disappointed to go right to whatever their biggest issue is. Each time that's the issue. You know, whether it's straight or it's, you know, maybe you're not big on Bailey, whatever it is. And you know, there's flaws to, I mean, straight is not, you know, there's a reason he's a depth guy. But it's not the coach. The coach can't stop the puck. And that was really what I felt that the issue was, that you have a substandard game. And this is what happened, you know, basically not last season, but the season before, where the Islanders just did terribly. They got injuries, you know, Vishnovsky out, and all this other stuff. But the real tale of that season was substandard goaltending. And when I was told that, I sat there and did I lose you?
No,
there you are.
I muted myself. That was a sneeze. Please do not be alarmed. I'm still here, and I'm going to do it again.
Gesundheit. All right. Anyway, that it was really substandard goaltending. And you know what? When they shored up that goaltending last year and obviously added in Letty and Boychuk, who had basically what I felt was all-star seasons, you saw the difference. So I think to that argument, there's something to be said. And now that Letty is playing a lot better, I think that Boychuk still has some distance to go. There's a reason he's now on the second pairing. And, but the team is doing fine. But when they get substandard goaltending, that's the way it goes. And you know what? That happens. You know, people were saying, why didn't Greiss play again? Well, you know what? If you look back, the back and forth has been doing very, very well. There's a reason Halak has actually been in the, you know, in the conversation. Yes, Greiss has just recently popped up ahead, but for most of the season, Halak has been a little bit better. And, you know, and you should stick to that same pattern. You want fresh goaltenders when it counts the most. How this team plays from March into April and then into the playoffs is where is where it really matters. So the second guessing and the, a little bit of the hand wringing, and the, you know, I had, you know, I know that you want to see her, especially, and let's also look, Luongo had a fantastic game, and you have to give it, the other goaltender played that much better. The Islanders created opportunity, especially in that first period, and, you know, those things are going to happen. So I don't feel that they, you know, obviously you want them to beat the teams that are beatable, but you can also, you know, if your goaltender doesn't play to the level or even just mediocre, and you have a goaltender from the other side that's playing exceptional, you know, that's the way, unfortunately, as it goes. I don't feel, you know, I don't like seeing a blowout. But I don't feel like the team, like in previous blowouts that you and I had talked about at the beginning of the season, was that type of game where the team unraveled. I kind of felt the goaltender unraveled. And, you know, maybe they should have popped in Greiss instead. You know, what can you do? But I didn't walk away from that game and say, it's the coach, or it's, you know, it's this, it's that. And I understand JT doesn't get a shot on goal. You know, we have years of consistency here. You figure that he's going to get off the snide. So I don't worry about that. And, you know, you hope that they get their shit together for the next game.
Well, I am certainly guilty as being the guy that goes back to his thing, and I totally understand what you mean by that. I see it. You know, in a loss like that, you lose 5-1, the wheels kind of fall off a little bit, and you've got people complaining about we still don't have the big winger for JT to play with. Well, I don't know. The timing there doesn't make sense to me at all. It kind of makes me think of the whole climate change caused ISIS argument we heard recently as well, but that's another different story altogether. I did see before this most recent game that on a Facebook group that I kind of monitor, an old friend of mine made a comment, something along the lines of, why are we not going with the guy that the goaltender that just posted a shutout in the last game, or something like, I normally would say that. But this time, you know, they've both been playing so well that I'm just going to shut my mouth. And, you know, after the fact, he followed up by saying something like, so much for both goaltenders playing so well. Well, yeah, but it's one game. And two, going into that, you really can't second guess the Greiss versus Halak thing for Tuesday's game, yesterday's game, because you had an ideal situation of late. You've got both guys playing lights out, and that's exactly what you want. It could have happened to Greiss just as easily. You never know. Sometimes a goaltender goes out there and stands on his head, and then the next night everything just unravels as quickly as it did for Halak in this last one. But and that could happen to anybody. But the other point right now is that they, you know, the Islanders just when you get down 3-1 and then 4-1 and then you end up losing 5-1. Like right now, yeah, they've posted a couple of 4-goal games recently, 5-goal game a while back against Colorado. But the firepower isn't quite where they want it to be, and I don't think they want to be getting into the you know, high scoring affairs just yet until some things start coming around for a few players in particular. As far as Tavares goes, you know, it's I agree with you. We've seen enough to know that there shouldn't be too much concern. He's going to get his points. He's going to get his chances. I would hope for a good showing next time out tomorrow night in Colorado for him, strictly because of, you know, last night not having anything to speak of. You know, and he hasn't had a multiple point game since November 16th. So, you know, you got to feel like it's coming. And the more he goes without, the closer you have to think that he is to that coming around. And obviously that'll be a big spark.
Yeah. You know, last season, JT, was a little bit stifled, until they actually put Bailey on his line, which, you know, the hate Bailey faction likes to dismiss, but yet the results speak for itself. You get a guy who helps the possession, doesn't necessarily get all the stats, keeps the puck in play, you know, it seemed to light up. You know, maybe it was, you know, that thing in the possession game. The possession game that for the Islanders is still a work in progress. We talked about that last week. You know, if the one thing we could say is, you know, the Islanders are a top six team right now in the NHL, and not all the things are working the way they're supposed to be, yet they're a top six team in the NHL. And if you look at goals for, despite that we want, yeah, you want another winger for JT. I want a lot of things. But fact is, in goals for, they're also six in the NHL. So there are some things still working. It's not like they have an offensive outage. They're just, you know, not quite there yet. And you want them to really be playing their best hockey when it counts most. So, I, you know, you let it slide because as long as they're top four or top six, which right now is their range, that, you know, if you track them out, they could be a 102 to 108 point team and very capable of going deep within the playoffs. And that's really where the measuring stick is going to be. If it's how they, you know, go into March and April. And that's why I like the back and forth with Greiss and Halak. You have vet goaltenders. You want them not to be accruing all these starts where deeper in the season they start to get a little bit run down. And you want fresh players. And, you know, that's, they didn't get that really last season. And here they're able to play them both back and forth and still get wins. And they're both, you know, except for the odd, you know, crappy game from Halak, which I think there's been two so far. You know, so far so good. So I really, and when Halak had a bad game previously, once again, the next time he started, he played fine. So, you know, you expect your vets to bounce back, and I don't think that people should read so much into it. I think that the way that the Islanders are really planned it is the long term. And if you talk to any fan who might react and go through this, but if you really find what they've been talking about and all that we've talked about and from blogs to Twitter and everything else, it's been about how the Islanders do in the playoffs, getting to the next step. So what the Islanders are doing makes sense.
Yeah, I think every one of us is, that's how we're measuring this season. And I think if you get a little bit more specific, it's get to the playoffs, get out of the first round, anything else is gravy. I think most people would agree with that. That's the measuring stick right now. But also tangibly from a regular season perspective, we've been saying since day one, you know, if they're on track for 105 points, and I just did the math real quick, you're right in that range you just spoke of for 105 points. That's about what we were saying from day one, isn't it? So
yeah, well, yeah, exactly. I felt like if they got a 104 points or more, it was a step forward, and you know, that's where they're going to be. You know, there's always ups and downs, and that's where it drives me nuts when any team has ups and downs. You know, you look at any other team, you know, everybody looks at the champs, but for a while they were down and they had to rise back up. LA Kings are still a little bit behind the Islanders, I think about a point. Not everybody's having everything work all at once. I think everybody expects this perfection because we saw such a good run last year, or it's just that you really, you know, you want them there. You can almost feel it, taste it. Those things are just quite there. Why can't they stay there? And it's a process. You know, the Islanders are not a perennial contender yet, but we're seeing glimmers of it, and I think that's what makes people kind of go nuts. Oh, if we just had that winger. And, you know, and you know, maybe they can make a move in the offseason. It's not going to happen this season. So, you know, I don't see top six wingers being thrown around the NHL. And the fact is that the Islanders' priorities of getting Greiss looks brilliant, and shoring up the defense and going with, you know, and getting some depth and moving out Grabner and you know, who's not exactly lighting it up over in the Leafs, gives them a little bit of breathing room and gets them, you know, they're trying to build for the long haul. And I think there's a lot of snap judgments that happen every time we go through a little dip. But the idea of a NHL season in 82 games is you're not going to have much of a straight line. It's always going to go up a little bit, down a little bit, up a little bit, down. You hope that they don't have, you know, a bunch of losses and looking a little lost like they did in the beginning of that, right before that West Coast trip. But if they, I'd rather have that now than in March, in February. You know, the what we saw last year of the team swooning after the All-Star game,
yeah,
looking tired, out of sorts. You know, let them work it out now. I don't understand the panic and the snap judgments. Let the team work it out.
Well, let's take the plunge into the silly brain that rests inside my head as one of these people that goes back to their one thing or can't quite put their finger on why they aren't totally satisfied with a team that's, you know, at near the top of the league in the standings overall. I said it on Twitter the other night, and so I'll say it here, and maybe that'll be our conversation sparker. But last year, I said it all year long. For some strange reason, I just was not able to enjoy last season for significant stretches. There'd be games here and there or three or four game winning streaks where they would look completely dominant. And even, you know, for those brief moments in time, I would think, you know, something special is going on here. But it was never sustainable for me. And so far this year, and granted, this last little bit less than a month, maybe 3 weeks or so, has been a really positive upward swing for the Islanders. This stretch wasn't – it reminded me a lot of last season again. And I haven't always – I've never been able to identify exactly what it is. I don't know if it's the fact that I decided long ago that I was never going to be a Jack Capuano fan. And I'm still trying to come back to earth and say that, you know, anything's possible, give the guy a little bit more of a chance this year, obviously being a big measuring stick. I don't know if it's that I am secretly in the John Tavares doesn't have an elite winger camp, although I've never said that outwardly. I don't know exactly what it is, but last night I felt like when they had that huge shot advantage in the first period and then fell behind anyway, I felt like they were very much in the game. They were a couple breaks away from taking it back over, and then ultimately they weren't able to get it done, and everything kind of got away from them. The biggest example being, you know, the Nelson goal that, you know, was immediately answered. But maybe you're right. Maybe the frustration, maybe the lack of an ability for somebody like me to pinpoint exactly what it is that's so perplexing about this team this for the past couple of years is the fact that they are that close to being the team that can get back into a game like last night when they really didn't have any business getting back into it, that they can go out night after night and execute you know, with precision and run up these long stretches of winning streaks and just, you know, be the team that, you know, when they get out there every night, you just know it, they're going to win. I don't have that right now. Maybe that's part of it. Maybe they are just that step away, though.
Well, I feel like, you know, I'll give you an example, and I looked it up last week and I didn't use it, but I've been thinking about it since. The interesting thing about the Islanders is, yes, you know, if you look at how many times they've allowed a goal in the third period, they're kind of middle of the road in the NHL. They're about 12th. So, you know, we all slap our foreheads and go, same old Islanders, but they're 12th. So they're in that mid-average, just above average of the NHL, which is not proper for what is a 4-6 top team. However, if you look at their goals for in the third period, they're third in the NHL. And that is the difference of their almost there, because they're scoring when it counts. And I don't think people really, and I've noticed this from fans, they don't even notice this, that they are actually third in the NHL for goals for in the third period, which is what you want to see and what is showing. but they're just not there yet. And you got to remember also, they're a very young team that really just rose thanks to the savvy moves of signing Halak last year and then taking advantage of cap casualties, something that Garth had been waiting to do for like two seasons, and take advantage of that and was able to get Letty and Boychuk. And then you got your three vets, and automatically they're, somebody who's now in the playoff conversation. But the rest of the team is so young. And I think they just haven't learned to be there and had that success. And I think last year, I think that Game 7 and that failure versus the Capitals teaches them a lot about failure and what it feels like for that young team. But they also haven't learned how to win and have that confidence yet. So we're seeing those glimmers, like in their goals for in the third period, because there's talent in that's there. And obviously the will, and they're able to, and they're capable. But they're also allowing those goals also, which shows that I chalk it up a little bit to youth and, a little bit of, just not consistent enough. And I think that this season, people look at the season almost like game to game, like it's the playoff game. And the season is a process. It is, especially for a young team, is where they're working out their issues. Nobody, if you've ever played a game, you don't always have a great game. You work it through. And when you have all these different players, it happens at different times, and you have dips and ebbs and growth happening with different players at different times, and it's a moving target. And I think that, this is the season to kind of work out those items, and I'm seeing some good attributes and some average attributes. And I don't see the deficient attributes. We can complain about the power play because I feel that it fluctuates too often, and I think it's 12th right now. And you want to see it in the top six. And we'll see where it is later in the season. At the beginning of the season, it was fourth. And I think they're still working it out. They've really come very far on the penalty kill. And I think there's some things that we don't allow that process to happen. And I think that those things are being worked out and hopefully improved. And I don't think there's going to be personnel changes, which we'll go into a little bit in a little bit. So this team is going to really probably stay intact, especially as long as they're in the top, I would say the top eight in the NHL, and carry through and see where they go. I think that you can't have it both ways. Everybody's saying, oh, you got to get value for Kyle Poso, you got to get value for Travis Hamonic, you got to get value for Franz Nielsen, they might not be signing. Well, didn't you want the team to win? Didn't you want them to go further in the playoffs? Which do you want it to be? Because if everybody say it's about winning now, then you have to go for it. You don't worry about those things, because good teams let their players walk and they replace them. You don't always get the opportunity to trade because the season, they count. As long as they're contributing, you can't really change your personnel. And I think that the Islanders are going to, fans are going to need to kind of lock in a little bit that this is the team and this is the way it's going to go, and hopefully they work it out.
You know what they want, though? They want to win now, but they want to get top value and for the players you mentioned, but that means that they want everything. They want it all.
Yeah.
They want both.
They do want it all, and unfortunately, that's not realistic. Teams, Garth let it be known back over the summer, as Arthur Staple reported, that they were dangling the name of Kyle Poso. And I didn't think he was going to be dealt then, but they were trying to see if there was interest, because the Islanders have big, big decisions this year. That they're, as they rise, they also need to make key decisions on personnel and find likely cheaper replacements while re-signing those key pieces that will keep them there. That means Strome as an RFA, Cizikas as an RFA, those are the players that are going to, you know, be there. I don't know about Tsitsikas as the long haul, because you can't value a guy on the fourth line as much as somebody that's in the top nine. But the point is that the Islanders are going to have big decisions ahead. But there's also, teams are not clamoring for a UFA that's going to be making over $7 million. When those teams, and there's only a limited amount of teams that really have that type of room, why do they have to trade assets when they can simply wait? And that's the realism. The Islanders can't afford to just deal Kyle Okposo for a bunch of draft picks and prospects. How does that help them now? How does it help them win? They're taking out, Kyle Okposo is not an all-star forward. He's not an elite forward. He's a solid guy. And right now he's contributing to the Islanders' success. Same thing happens with Travis Hamonic. Bunch of teams called. Garth set a price because this is how you know it's all about winning now. Because they will not accept a forward. Because they will not leave the gap. They want what they feel is fair value and leave the Islanders better in some way. I think it was more of an offensive defenseman. They're not getting that. Talks broke down. You haven't heard a peep since I reported Thanksgiving. Not one rumor. And it's for good reason. There are no more talks. The Islanders have set their price. And, you know, right now, Hamonic is contributing. This team is within the top six in the NHL. They can't afford to make those changes now unless somebody's going to overpay. And that seems very thin. And that's why I almost lost my mind last week, and this will go into part of our theme today, is that, our old friend from Hockey Buzz put a rumor out that Stamkos is available and the Islanders are front runners, which is not true. The Islanders are not front runners. They're not even in that conversation. The Islanders don't have the assets to trade for him. The Islanders are not going to be trading and getting Stamkos. It would throw off any concept of holding on to JT. It's just not a realistic situation. But it gives you a reality of where the Islanders really are versus the rumor mill, is they want to stay intact. And, yeah, maybe somebody will come knocking on the door and make the Islanders an offer. But we're not seeing a lot of movement within the NHL. So I think that people really need to strap in. As long as the Islanders are doing well, that Travis Hamonic will not be traded. And news for you, I don't think he's necessarily going to be traded in the offseason if it's just draft picks and prospects. They know that Travis Hamonic is a key guy, and he might have had this wish, but he's under contract. And Travis Hamonic is a professional, so he's going to have to deal unless somebody offers something solid. So I think that people need to start thinking that the team's going to remain intact in the long haul right now.
Yeah, if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. You set the price, so you see if anybody's willing to meet it. And then when they say, hey, no, we can't meet you there, but we'll give you this. If you know that your hand's not forced in any way, you're a contending team, you say, okay, that's great, no thanks, and you walk away. And that's where they're at. I think anybody that's complaining about why is Kyle Okposo still on the team, or why is Travis Hamonic especially still on the team after the news that you know has been out there recently, they would not be happy with what they would see coming back in return right now, in comparison to what the Islanders have set as their price. Of course, nobody knows exactly what that is. We can muster up a pretty decent idea, just because, as we identified for starters, you know, if Travis Hamonic, one of your best defensemen, is going out, you got to replace that immediately, especially if you're going to do something right now when the team's playing well overall. So we identified that, you know, a defenseman has to be a part of that. And if they couldn't find the right one in a deal that suited them at the, you know, right now, then it's not a deal that needs to be made right now. And I don't think there's any other really simpler way to explain that. in terms of Oposo, you know, that people should be counting their lucky stars that he's still around. He's been producing the way he's been producing right now because, you know, JT was ill for a few games there, hasn't been right, or wasn't right probably on either end of that. And, you know, has gone through a period of just being a little bit snake bit. So at least somebody, you know, has helped fill that void just a little bit. When everybody starts firing on all cylinders, this team has proven in the past that they can, you know, score in bunches. And I think we'll see that again before too long, hopefully. Regarding Stamkos, I don't think he's Islander bound by any means either. But I do believe, just from kind of reading the tea leaves down here and looking at facts and going with my gut for several years now, that while it might not be Toronto, this guy, I don't believe, is going to be spending his entire career in Tampa. The first couple of times that I brought that up, it was when I was stepping aside away from the business for a while. And I think some of the locals took that as sour grapes or I have some sort of agenda or something like that. But it didn't take much to realize that when you got a guy like Steve Yzerman that came in as GM down here at that time, who learned from some of the best in Detroit and understands the idea of fielding a balanced team through and through. That means talent-wise, that means skill set-wise, and that these days certainly means financial-wise, that it was never a sure thing. They in the few years after that, they achieved some, you know, respectable levels of success and some admirable levels of success. Certainly last year going to the Stanley Cup final. But they did that a lot, largely because of a lot of young guys coming up together at the same time. And any time that that happens in this day and age, all those guys are going to be up at the same time. So before you dig into whether the kid wants to go to Toronto or whether the Lightning should move him this year if they continue to struggle and rather than let him walk as a free agent or whatever the case may be, before you get anywhere near that, you have to look at it as this guy's going to command one of the biggest contracts ever. And you know he's getting all kinds of pressure from the NHLPA to, you know, go above and beyond what Jonathan Toews got, I believe, is the comparable from a couple of years ago. That's one factor. And the other side of it is if you go ahead and you know, give in to whatever he is going to want or his agent's going to want if you're the Tampa Bay Lightning, you've got other guys that you're not going to be able to afford immediately. You know, Victor Hedman comes to mind down the road, only a couple years away from being a UFA in his own right. And the triplets, the oft-talked about triplets, the, you know, you got a guy like Ryan Callahan on the hook for 5.8 for the next five seasons. I mean, it's not that easy. And they're going to have some serious choices to make. I mean, Ben Bishop's established himself as a number one goaltender. He's a UFA in a couple of years, and he's already making, you know, just a hair under $6 million a year. So, you know, to me, it's one or the other. And for a team like that, if you want to continue to stay competitive for the long haul, I don't think you choose the one over the many.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, look, Tampa's, if they try to re-sign Stamkos, they have to blow up the team to afford him. And everybody, and this happens with the Islanders too, oh, just trade Grabowski and Kuhlman and you can afford this, this, and that. But you still have to replace those positions. And the market for those positions are actually just a shade below what they're making. So, you know, maybe they're making a little bit above $1 million or, you know, half a million more. But reality is you still have to pay for your roster players, and that seems to always be forgotten. And the Tampa has, you know, as you mentioned, are on the hook for quite a bit. And that key of staying competitive, they're going to have to decide what their core is. And also the player helps decide that. You know, it hasn't seemed exactly a love fest. If we, you know, read between the tea leaves in the last year with Stamkos and Tampa. So maybe it helps that this decision is helping made for them, because I think that they would have to blow up the team and they're not assured to be a playoff or a finals contender next year because of all the heavy changes and what they would need to do to afford all those things.
Yeah, you know, I want to make it clear. I have no direct ties any longer and haven't for several years. But that's one of the things that I wish I was around for, to see kind of the change in Steven Stamkos firsthand from when the Lightning transitioned from Guy Boucher to John Cooper. I got to meet John Cooper very briefly when he was coaching, when he was hired to coach their AHL affiliate, which at the time was in Norfolk and eventually moved to Syracuse. He was not on the NHL staff and wasn't until Guy Boucher was let go. And again, I don't know anything firsthand, but they're just, you know, he's changed a bit as a player. Remember, he did suffer that, you know, gruesomely broken leg a few years back, but it didn't appear to affect his game much last year when he still potted 43 goals, a few seasons removed from a 60-goal campaign, of course, but that's neither here nor there at this point. But, you know, there are some people among the fan base, at least, that seem to think that there's been a little bit of a rip there. And, you know, the Lightning have been here before. You know, iconic members of this team that they've had to make a decision on, you know, and Steve Yzerman has had to be a part of that decision-making process through every period of his tenure. You know, Vince LeCavalier being bought out and moving on to Philadelphia, which has just been abysmal for both player and team. Marty St. Louis kind of forced Tampa's hand a little bit last year or 2 years ago. I don't do math, even if it is just one or two. But and then having to do the best they could as far as that goes. And then here, although I don't think you'll see anything coming directly from the player saying that he wants to be moved or anything like that, and certainly not in the year where he's getting ready to walk potentially as a free agent anyway, you know, there's a decision to be made, like I said earlier. And I think, you know, sometimes we're in the era now, with very few exceptions, where fan bases are just going to have to learn to not be as attached to individual players as they have in years past. I mean, sure, have your favorites, hope, you know, as hard as you want, that one or many of these guys will be with your favorite team for quite a long time. But in a situation such as this, and it's the exact same reason why the Islanders have to be so careful with their cap and their finances with John Tavares in tow. It's just the way the Lightning were constructed does not, to me, make it conducive to keep Steven Stamkos, a player of his caliber, a unique talent, a superstar in a league with few really iconic superstars, to keep him over the long haul when you're constructed the way that they are otherwise outside of him. And he is just one player. He's a fantastic player, one of the best we've seen in a long, long time. But he is just one player, and you can't ruin everything just to keep one guy.
Yeah, you know, yes, he's 25 years old, and you hate, you know, and I know that from an Islander fan point of view, if they were in a situation with JT like that, they, you know, they would be much hand-wringing, and I wouldn't be very happy along with them. But, you know, the Tampa kind of made their bed with salary, and you can see why the Islanders have been so, so careful in their cap management. For everybody who bitches about why can't they go out and buy, when JT is, you know, when they try to and have the room to re-sign JT, you will thank your lucky stars of that fastidious attention to that type of detail and salary, because it is extremely important, especially where the cap is not necessarily going to rise as much as it's been in the last couple of years, that teams are going to be in severe straits. You know, even Chicago, who just re-signed Seabrook, is going to have to do a little blowing up in the offseason to, you know, and they do it very well, but it's not easy to do. And there's there's a lot of anxious moments in trying to work out a deal. And look, they made a trade. Look at Chicago, they made a deal. They made trades. They brought in they dealt Sharp and brought in Trevor Daley. Trevor Daley didn't work out, and now they have to go find, you know, somebody who I think is substandard, Scuderi, and to show that, you know, not all their cap moves to get under the cap has always worked out for them, and Tampa's going to have to do some fancy footwork anyway. And I think that people are not going to appreciate right now the Islanders and Garth Snow's fastidious attention to the cap management until probably a couple years from now when they're able to do what it looks like Tampa cannot do. And, you know, though I think it's more than just money here at with Stamkos, I don't think that it's going to be fully appreciated for a couple of years of something that I think is supremely important in this cap era of being able to have the salary and be willing to say goodbye to some players, even though they were good, and finding, you know, cheaper replacements and shoring up with trades and other, you know, fancy footwork and hope that you have the kids in the system. That's the other thing about the Islanders having, and obviously it's worked for Tampa, is solid drafts and having those prospects and having those young players that come up. That's what's made them competitive. So I think that, you know, as much as the and Stamkos and as much as the cap management stuff seems to might annoy people because they want to be immediately gratified with your, you know, with these all-stars or these elite wingers and all this other stuff, but those old things cost money, and they cost money not just now but in the long haul. I don't think there's a real full appreciation to that, and I think in a couple of years I think there's going to be a much more higher respect, hopefully, from fans. It certainly will come from the NHL and other GMs and Garth's trying to avoid that entanglement and the limitations that it creates.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating to me. It's great. It's a great conversation topic for our show, given my previous connection with the Lightning. And I said it before. I think there's some similarities between the Islanders and the Lightning. But we talked about the beginning of our run in the off season. We talked about cap management in particular. I believe we went through every player on the roster in a keep 'em, dump 'em style format, and we talked about their salary, their cap numbers, as best as we know them to be, and their RFA, UFA situations, and all that good stuff. When you look at the Lightning, where they came from last year, that close to winning a Stanley Cup. Great, wonderful. They were on the brink. They've struggled this year. When you look at the Islanders in the playoffs a couple times in the last few seasons, looking like a good bet to go back again and maybe make some noise, those are teams that you want to have some flexibility, right, as the season moves forward. You never know what's going to go down. You never know who's going to get hurt, what moves might have to be made, and stuff like that. According to General Fanager, everybody's favorite site since you know its predecessor CapGeek went by the wayside, the Tampa Bay Lightning have $30,000 in change in cap space right now. Okay, that's nothing. That's you know
Chump
a curly
change.
Hair, if you know what I mean. The Islanders have you know, according to the same site, the Islanders have $6,300,000 in change. Okay, that's not, you know, that's a healthy number. That's a flexible number. That gives you the leeway that you need for, you know, several situations that can arise. So if you're telling me you Tampa Bay Lightning aren't right now in a bind looking at their superstar player, the icon of their franchise at this point, with a $7.5 million cap hit this season, unrestricted after the year, and the entire Players Association hoping for him to literally break the bank this offseason. If you're telling me they're not in a spot, man, then I don't know that you know what you're talking about, especially when you look up and down that roster. And I'm just, you know, glancing here and seeing names like, you know, Kucherov, Namestnikov, Killorn. These are guys, young guys that the Tampa Bay Lightning look at as key players for now and for the future, all RFAs after the season. You know, Jonathan Drouin, a future superstar, an RFA after next season. Andre Palat, Valtteri Filppula, Ryan Callahan, all making a pretty penny. And then that's just among the forward ranks. You know, Victor Hedman, like I mentioned before, Anton Strahlman, $4.5 million, Jason Garrison, $4.6 million, Matt Carl, for the love of God, $5.5 million. where is it coming from? And then Ben Bishop, the goaltender. I know they have goaltending depth. You might have to see something happen there at some point. But, guys, I just, you know, I saw it in the cards a while back. And if I'm wrong, great, wonderful. Laugh at me. Tell me I was wrong from the beginning. But as you do that, realize that your team is going to be very different moving forward. If Stamkos stays, which I believe is a long shot at this point, you're going to see a lot of other names go, strictly because they'll have to. And if he goes, then I believe that, you know, believe it or not, it seems to not make sense at first glance, but they'd be better off in the long run. I really believe that.
Well, what helps them so much is, and this is, and I mentioned it before, and I feel like I need to mention it again, how good their drafts have been. The only thing that keeps them competitive is because they have those young players coming up that they can afford to absorb. You know, obviously it's not easy to lose Stamkos, but you can take that 7.5 and use it in free agency or in via trade and find someone to at least replace some of that and still have young players that are getting better. To, you know, they might not be Stanley Cup finalists after that, but they could be playoff caliber. You know, this is still, you know, people forget, the teams are a business. And they still want to be competitive for the long haul. And thank God that they have those prospects in their system to help absorb that type of hit. So as much as it's tough to retain, especially if they try to hold on to Stamkos, but I agree with you that I think that they're in a very, very tough bind. And, you know, the window under Stamkos is really this season. And, you know, and it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment next year. And that's why it's so important to be so careful with salary, because you're not going to be able to keep those favorite players. And then the Islanders are having the same situation. You know, Bobby Kenzie wrote a piece today that, you know, he felt that Stamkos is really, you can pretty much get the gist that he doesn't think he's going to be staying there. And he gave the three different scenarios of what could happen. And the one second one, which he even said that's probably not going to happen, is the sign and trade. And I cannot even remember the last time I've seen a sign and trade in the NHL, if any.
You don't know if I have.
I don't think that's happened, and I don't think it will ever happen. It doesn't make sense to me. Somebody was mentioning that with Kyle Poso and Franz Nielsen and all that, and it didn't make any sense to me. Nobody does that, and there's a reason for that not to be done. You know, it's not going to happen. But, there's big decisions, and I really felt that after reading the Bob McKenzie piece on Stamkos over on TSN, that it really applies also to the Islanders with Kyle Poso. It's not the same level, obviously, but it's the same situation. Islanders have decisions to make, but it's about also competing and what is best in the long run. And Tampa needs to do what's best for them in the long run, and I kind of feel that in this case they need to hopefully trade Stamkos and get some sort of assets for him. I don't know how much they'll be, because I know that in the case of Kyle Poso, not many teams are really willing to give very much. Now, Stamkos is a much, much different type of player, and it depends on the team and what the other needs are, so you can't really compare them apples to apples. But you also wonder if some teams would you rather just wait till free agency. You know, if Tampa wants to deal Stamkos, they're going to have a limited list, if any, from them. And then they're going to have to hope for assets and hope that there's competition between those teams that are on that list.
Yeah, you know what? Just to jump in there real quick before we get kicked off by Mary Poppins. Again, so we're in each other's heads sometimes. I was just going to say, it's not comparing apples to apples. It's not apples to apples when you talk about Stamkos and Poso. And it's not apples to apples when you talk about what I want Islander fans to do, is to monitor this situation with the Lightning and Stamkos and think about it for three seasons down the line when John Tavares is potentially a UFA. The Islanders, every decision that they make, and I know you'll back me on this, has to be done with that 3 years from now in mind. You know, because at least in part, because if they want him to be an Islander for life, that is the mindset that you have to have. And that means that Garth Snow cannot afford to get too many moves wrong. And, you know, so far, all in all, I think he's done a pretty good job of that. So when guys are complaining about we don't have the winger, we don't have it, we don't have that, you know, you got to look at the big picture. That is a huge deal. And I think, you know, if they don't, you know, this year, next year, hopefully they make big, because, you know, that window is getting closer by the minute, believe it or not. All right, we're getting run out of here. It's great to be back.
We'll be back
next week.
And I will end us with the music. We can go over for a second, I think. I don't think we
I don't know. She makes me nervous.
What people don't realize, I should explain this to fans, is there's a British lady that tells us 10 seconds, 1 minute, and all this, like, countdown, and all you want to say is, shut the fuck up! But anyway, we're in a little bit of OT here, but I think we've hit on all the major stuff. I mean, you know, the Islanders, let's see how they play the next, you know, they've now gone their first game into their next 10-game, and they had a stinker. Last one, at least a goalie stinker, and let's see how that goes, and we will meet up next week. We will talk Star Wars. Be very careful, folks, if you don't want spoilers, because I just read a friend of mine made the mistake of reading through Reddit, and he caught somebody said the end of Force Awakens, and now he's basically pissed. So be very careful. So,
well, you know, I'll be careful. I'll be careful not to spoil it for you. I want to add that the British countdown lady reminds me of the intercom in Spaceballs when the whole damn ship is about to blow up. We've been talking about Star Wars a little bit, so I felt like that was an appropriate reference. It makes me nervous. I'm sorry to rush us. I'm going to shut up and leave this as it is until next week. Thanks for listening again, everybody. I'm John. This is BD. I think he's going to play some music for you, and we're out of here.
Yep. But first, we'll hear from our friend.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
And on that note, folks, we'll see you again next week.